You're listening to Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, with host John Hansen. Today's show is sponsored by attorney Michael Leonard from Leonard Trial Lawyers. Now, here's John Hansen, and let's get legal.
At 1:10 on just an incredibly gorgeous Saturday afternoon in Chicago. Soak it in, everybody. You know, we don't know how long we're going to get these nice days like this. It's nice to see Mike Leonard in studio. Mike, how are you doing, my friend?
Hey, John. How's it going? I was almost late because I didn't take the illegal spot on the street.
You know,
I always take illegal spots on the street.
But illegal today, spots?
Oh yeah, don't you do that yourself? I park in illegal spots all the time.
What, you don't get towed?
Never got towed.
Do you have a little Mike Leonard card or something that people know?
I never got towed, but I do once in a while get a ticket. But sometimes you find these little secret spots and get away with it for a couple days. But so you had one right in front, and I'm like, and it said something like only consulate or something like that. So I avoided it. And,
I'm glad you did.
I still made it.
You know, this is a legal show we are on. We're talking about being...
Well, you're talking to a defense lawyer, so you know you got to bend the rules here and there, John. You know how that is.
That is true. Mike Leonard, defense attorney, federal defense attorney, whistleblower lawyer, does a lot of great things. 312-981-7200. If you have any questions, I know Iridian's been talking to some of the guests already calling in on, and they can really have to do with any case you've heard about. Maybe about something in your own life or just general curiosities about how the law works, because Mike Leonard has, I think you've almost seen it all probably, haven't you?
I've seen it all, John. I mean, I got 20 years left of doing this, but I've seen it all.
You really want to dive into the football thing here, don't you?
We got it, John. It's Saturday.
We've got a football game coming up on Northwestern.
We've got preempted by Northwestern football, so we've had short shows. But yeah, we got to start with football and the law.
Okay.
And the Harbaugh story, right?
Can you recap for people what has happened in the last couple of weeks if they aren't huge Michigan fans or Michigan haters?
Yeah, and can I say it out loud? I am a Michigan hater.
That's fine.
But so what happened was the Michigan football team hired a guy who had a military background, which is kind of appropriate for
Veterans Day.
Okay. So, and what he would do is he would go to other team stadiums and do a lot of advanced scouting. And some of the hilarious video, though, is they show him on the sidelines trying to be incognito on a future opponent's sidelines, right? Mm-hmm. Wearing sunglasses and things like that.
Groucho Marx.
And the whole scandal arises out of the fact that the allegation is they're stealing signals. He's doing the advanced work and getting people to film the signal callers,
and if
so
people
that
don't know
Michigan
what,
can steal the signals.
And if people don't know what signals are, it's not like the NFL where they can pipe the call into the helmet of the quarterback. There's often players, usually the backup quarterbacks, there's sometimes three of them, and they have every school does it differently. It's like signs in baseball, or it's sometimes literal signs of fence, like just different things, and whatever. They pipe these over to the quarterback so he knows what the play is. And if you have enough, if you have someone watching it who then can go back, see what the plays are, see what the signs are, you could, in theory, decode what's happening.
Yeah, for instance, if you knew... let's say defensively for Michigan, if you knew it's going to be a run or it's going to be a pass, that's a nice advantage,
huge,
right? And so all these blue Michigan people who are listening here say, no, everyone does it. But so they allow scouting, they allow watching video, but they do have a rule that says you can't do advanced scouting at the other team's stadium, which I don't know if that even makes sense, right?
No, I don't think
but it's a rule, right?
Any fan could watch the signals happening and then blog about it.
Exactly.
Like it seems like a silly rule to me, and I don't think it's a huge infraction. Yeah. Change your signs up every game and you don't have a problem.
I just think the way they went about it and the funny video tip that they found. So they found this guy on other team sidelines wearing sunglasses, and when the play would end up on the sidelines, they'd show him kind of ducking, trying to get out of the camera. So it's all kind of funny. So what happened is then the NCAA has not taken action. NCAA is the big governing body for college sports. They have yet to take action. They're investigating. They're very slow, right? So you would expect they wouldn't even be done until, who knows, mm-hmm, 3 to 6 months.
But maybe by design.
Yeah, and the Big Ten steps in, though, which a lot of people say, well, it's not in the interest of the Big Ten to discipline a team who might go to the national championship,
100%.
Right?
100%. You want to do good for the conference.
So they stepped in, and tactically, I believe, on Friday, they waited until Friday afternoon, which was a court holiday, and they waited until the end of the day. They issued Michigan a directive that just said basically, hey, we're taking disciplinary action against you for violating our sportsman, you know, policy, sports, unsportsmanlike conduct policy, so to speak. And your coach will not be able to coach the next regular three regular season games, which are like Penn State, Ohio State, and somebody else. Probably some of the biggest games of the year.
Not saying he's suspended indefinitely.
No.
Could be at the Big Ten Championship, probably. Could be, yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of bizarre.
Like, yes.
It's kind of a
if you're going to do it or
yeah,
don't.
Kind of a weird penalty. Hey, we'll let you coach if you get to the championship, but we won't let you do these games. So, of course, Michigan's up in arms. They get their lawyers to file a TRO, which is a motion for temporary restraining order.
It's like a civil?
Civil, yeah. So what they did is they went to a court in Michigan and filed for a TRO, which is basically an attempt on an emergency expedited basis to get a court to issue an injunction until they can have a hearing on the merits of this issue, whether the coach should be suspended. And so that's typically handled just by looking at the papers. The court would say, okay, will I sort of maintain the status quo as it was before the Big Ten took their action?
Mm-hmm.
Will I kind of freeze everything?
Because we could talk Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday or something.
Then we'll have an evidentiary hearing. We'll have witness testimony. It might be a couple weeks down the road. So most people expected the Michigan court to issue a ruling, either grant the TRO, which would say, okay, we're going to put on hold that punishment, right, and we'll get to it later, Or they could have denied it. But instead, in great football terms, John, they punted.
Mm.
They didn't issue a ruling, and they said, gee, we're going to consider it on Friday.
Next Friday.
Yeah, next Friday. So that means, of course, Harbaugh has to sit out, and there'll be a hearing on the merits on next Friday, which will be obviously interesting and well-publicized and well-covered, where they can present witness testimony. So that's a good story, John, to start with, I think.
So they next Friday will examine the merits of the case or the merits of a temporary restraining order.
Yeah, whether to issue a temporary restraining order. But the big thing when you're trying to get an injunction is this concept in the law called irreparable harm. Okay, so you have to convince the court that if the court doesn't act and stay this, so to speak, put it on hold, that University of Michigan will suffer irreparable harm. And, you know, in a common sense, give me a common sense example, if someone was going to demolish your house.
Right.
And you wanted a court to stop it, you'd have a great argument that, hey, look, if you don't stop this, I will suffer irreparable harm because they're going to take my house to the ground. Right. So the big issue is this really irreparable harm? You know, if they don't have a coach for a game and they lose a football game, is that irreparable harm? We'll see what a court says. It's going to be kind of interesting, I think.
My first take is no, it's football. It's a game. My second take is there's a lot of financial issues at stake. There are reputation issues at stake, which also could impact recruiting, which could impact finances, endowments, donations from alumni. So I don't know. I don't know if it's irreparable harm, but I imagine that's one argument of why, no, let's put this on hold.
Yeah, and one of the arguments the Michigan lawyers have been making is that the reputational damages would constitute irreparable harm. So it's going to be interesting to see how the court deals with that. The money side in these cases, that's when you don't have irreparable harm. So if your argument is we're going to lose money, the courts will say that's not irreparable harm. That's just a money damages issue. You could recover that now. You could recover it later. We're not going to. You would never want to make that argument.
So reputation is a stronger argument.
Yeah, definitely. Or some the idea that the loss of a football game is irreparable harm. I don't know, but you could argue that that leads to you're not getting in the national championship series, all that stuff. But that really goes to money too. So I think it's going to be kind of a fun hearing to watch and to talk about next time, John.
Boy, we dove right into that. 312-981-7200. If you have any questions, concerns, thoughts on the legal world, we have a lot of cases to get to today that we can dive into, including some of the stuff involving the former president, which I want to touch on.
Yeah.
Unless we get a bunch of calls and then we never get to go to it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's important stuff to talk about, but it's this gorgeous Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
But we'll dive into it. I want to talk
John,
about
John, if someone's going to give up a portion of their Saturday with this weather and call us, you better take that call.
I will absolutely do so. If you have any questions about how the law works, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. More with Mike Leonard from Leonard Trial Lawyers. Let's get legal powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Mike Leonard from Leonard Trial Lawyers. You ready to get to the phone lines?
John, let's do it, baby.
Rhonda, stay on the line. Don't go anywhere. We are going to answer your question, or at least try to. But first, Mike had a question related to what we were talking about at the University of Michigan. Mike, what do you got for us?
Well, full disclosure, not a Michigan fan.
That's fine.
But I
welcome
just
to the
to
table.
Ask Mike, if you thought, I'm sorry?
I said, welcome to the table.
Yeah, exactly. What are the chances that the Big Ten or the NCAA might take further action before the playoffs start?
Interesting.
That's a really good question. And so if a listener's not attuned to the college football world, what happens is, you know, the four highest ranked teams get into the national championship series, right? Mm-hmm. And so right now, Michigan is in the driver's seat to make the top four. And the question is, you know, will the NCAA step in and try to take some action to sort of thwart that? I don't think the NCAA can act quickly enough. You know, they actually attempt to follow due process. So I think they'll have more of a legitimate evidence-gathering process, more of an investigation. They tend to move very slowly. So I don't think they would take action that would bar Michigan and Harbaugh from getting into the Final Four championship series. The Big Ten, I don't think they'll do anything more. And I think it's kind of a weird punishment to sort of jump in preemptively when really the NCAA is usually the governing body on discipline. So I think that was a mistake.
Maybe they were just saying, we are doing something, see?
Yeah, I think they were responding to a lot of public pressure, right? But it's usually not the Big Ten's job to do that. It's normally the NCAA vets the whole thing, has legitimate hearings. You know, people are allowed to present evidence, and it's very exhaustive.
So,
and then they take action. So I think the Big Ten was responding to a lot of public pressure, a lot of, you know, sportscasters and media and anti-Michiganers, you know, to do something. And what they did was kind of weird. I mean, you're either going to do the full money or you're not. So to say, hey, we're going to jump in and you can't coach for three games, but then after that, everything's okay, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
And so Harbaugh has a contract with the University of Michigan.
Correct.
Does the NCAA have authority over them, and does the Big Ten have authority over University of Michigan due to some like contracts between these universities and these governing bodies?
Yeah, because by agreeing to participate in the NCAA sports program, you're basically agreeing to abide by the governing body's rules and regulations. So,
including they could kick Harbaugh out as coach.
Well, here's the thing. So they're taking the action against the university.
Ah.
However, they're directing the punishment exclusively at the coach. So they're still taking action against Michigan, but they're saying, here's our disciplinary action against University of Michigan. It's to sit Harbaugh on the sideline, right?
Right. But let's say the NCAA stepped in at some point and said Harbaugh has to go or is suspended indefinitely. But like an employment lawyer could get involved at that point too, because you're talking much of what happened at Northwestern, to be frank.
Oh, yeah.
About idea of reputation and illegal firings, et cetera.
Yeah, well, you could have the, you know, NCAA, who's kind of the super governing body, could take action against Michigan or Harbaugh. They could suspend him, bar him, make him sit, you know, a season, whatever they wanted to do. And then Michigan, in turn, could say, hey, you have a contract with us, and you violated this provision of our contract that says you won't put the university in disrepute,
right,
or you'll abide by NCAA regulations. So therefore, we're giving you a for-cause termination. We're not going to pay you all the money that we owe you, which is kind of what Northwestern's basically doing with Fitzgerald.
Right.
You know.
Okay. Hey, Mike, thanks for the phone call. Okay, have a good day.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Rhonda. Rhonda, you've got an interesting question. I've never heard this one before. Go ahead and give it to us.
And hope you never hear it again.
Okay.
My sister and I were in charge of my uncle's estate, and he wanted to donate his body to science. And so that happened back in May of 2020. They told us he should be back to funeral home in about 2 years. And what they do is they cremate them and they're sending them back to my sister.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we still don't have Uncle Joe home.
Oh.
We have called the society multiple times, them saying that, well, he must be an interesting subject, so we kept him, they might be keeping him a little longer. Okay, fine. We got through to, well, my sister Debbie got through to somebody there who, I believe his name was Mark.
Okay.
And she got an ID number on the body, and we only know it's an ID number because we have his friend's mother in my closet.
Okay.
Did the same thing. So now we can't get Joe back. They won't call us back. They won't do anything. And we had tried contacting multiple lawyers, and somebody had said we might need a Replevin's lawyer.
Let's, Rhonda, why don't, I'm going to put you on hold really quickly. Mike, any thoughts on this initially?
Yeah, my big question is, was there a contract between you and
estate and this society?
Yeah. So who's the contract with? What is it, like a particular? Is it a university? Is it a cremation society? Who's the agreement with?
The Anatomical Gift Society.
Okay.
The one that was recently on the news for abusing bodies.
Oh, no.
Wow.
And, you know what? The story just doesn't get any better.
And have you sent them a demand letter, basically from an attorney saying, hey, we think you're violating the rights of the deceased and his family, and also the contract which governed the use of the body? Has that happened?
We have not done that yet. We recently found out in the last 2 months somebody suggested the Replevin lawyer.
What is Replevin? Do you know what that is, Mike?
It's basically, I don't know too much about it, attempting to get back property.
Okay.
But I think the first step would be a demand letter to the society essentially saying, hey, look, we think you, we have a legal cause of action against you. We're going to assert it, but we'd rather just have the body back and everyone go on their way. I would certainly try that first. You can feel free to give me a call offline, you know, this week. We could talk about it a little bit more, but it's a very interesting situation. And it makes me wonder, you know, does the body really exist?
Right.
Do they have it to return? You know, were there restrictions in about what they could do and not do?
Yeah, was there, like, do you have a physical copy of a contract, Rhonda?
We do. My sister has it. My mom had to sign it, his sister, who recently passed away.
Okay.
Yeah, but at least we have her body, and we were able to bury it. Poor Joe. We have his headstone and everything.
Oh,
we don't have Joe.
That's horrible.
Which is also sad, because, like, donating to science is such a noble thing to do to help others learn from the body and such. It's an important thing. I'd hate to discourage anyone from that, and it sounds like you're really going through it. We got about 30 seconds till news, Mike. Maybe offline we can get numbers exchanged or something.
Yeah.
Does that sound good, Rhonda?
That would be great.
Hang on the line, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Generally speaking, what number can people reach you at, Mike Leonard?
312-380-6559.
We won't give out your cell phone number here on the radio. I don't think you'd like that. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Call with any questions. We appreciate Rhonda. We're trying to help Aranda, and we've got time for the news. WGN. Mike Leonard, Leonard Trial Lawyers here. How you doing, my friend?
Good, man. We're getting some good questions today, John.
We are. Let's go to the phone lines. Ken, you're on WGN. I know Iridian told you no names, last names with this call. Okay, Ken?
Got it.
What do you got for us?
Okay. So my brother-in-law is suing to get a higher price on some rental real estate that we own in common. And his strategy is to slow roll it. It's been going 3 years already. My question is there a way to have the judge rule for mediation? Sort of like a divorce. Like, you know, okay, you know, you guys aren't, you, one side just will refuse to come to the table and resolve this, wrap up this issue. You know, can I?
So wait, you own property, like you guys own property together, rental property?
Yes.
And income is coming in and you're not getting your part of it?
Neither one of us are getting the part of it. It's coming in. It's just going into the bank account, and I'm actually managing the properties.
Huh.
And they you know, they're like, we can't take any money out until this is resolved. But they refuse to negotiate. They refuse to come to the table and resolve it.
Huh.
So I'm trying to bring it to an end. So
right.
So I was thinking, well, maybe if I can get the judge to say, make him go come to the table and do mediation. Mediation's usually voluntary, I understand. So they still might not have to abide by any agreements, or there still might be any agreements, but I'm just trying to get them to, you know, this happens a lot in divorces. This is not a divorce, but it's, you know, similar, where it's just kind of, I'm just not playing. You know,
right. Yeah. All right, Ken, let's get Mike some.
Yeah. A couple questions for you. So where is the case pending? Like in the circuit court of what county?
Oh, Cook County.
Okay. And have you taken discovery, meaning exchange documents, taken depositions, that sort of stuff?
They threatened to do that, but they haven't even gotten around to that.
Okay.
We made some inquiries for documents. They ignored them. They said, no, we're not doing that.
Okay.
And then
well,
they made inquiries for documents, which I supplied, which they also ignored. They didn't do anything with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a couple practical things you can do. Number one, a motion to compel production of those documents. Number two, you know, notice the case up for status and ask the court to set a final discovery schedule, you know, that depositions be completed by X date, you know, written discovery and document production be completed by Y date, you know, that sort of thing. Because, you know, most judges do not want their cases to languish. But sometimes, you know, if the parties aren't preemptively pushing the case, the court doesn't have a huge interest sometimes in making a move. So sometimes you have to file something to make it move. And if you bring it to the court's attention that you're sort of at a standstill, they're more likely to set a final schedule on getting those things done, which means, therefore, you know, then you'll get to the situation where you have a trial date. Your idea about the mediation, of course, is a good idea, but, you know, the court doesn't have the power to force the parties to engage in mediation. So they can't make them. You know, certain cases, when they're filed in Cook County at the beginning, they can be assigned to mandatory mediation. But in general, you know, once you have a case that's being litigated, if the amount of controversy is above a certain amount, they're not going to force you to go to mediation. And even if they did, you know, they can't force you to negotiate and they can't force you to settle. So I think more practically, you want to do something preemptively with a motion to compel or a motion to set a final discovery schedule, something to move the case forward. That's probably your best bet.
Ken, you got a lawyer?
Yes.
Okay. Sound likes it because you're doing some stuff. Okay. Did that all make sense?
Yeah, that did. Well, so I want to make sure, because I'm going to request it of my lawyer. Motion to set a final, a compel document and a scheduled, what was it?
If you're not getting discovery compliance, meaning the other side's not producing the documents to you, then you have to do what's called a motion to compel, meaning you send a meet and confer letter to the other side saying, hey, look, you know, we issued these discovery requests on such and such date. You're not giving us what we want. You know, this is an attempt to resolve the issue. And then, of course, it sounds like they're not going to give you anything. Then you file a motion to compel. And certainly if this stuff is relevant or reasonably relevant, the judge is going to enter an order compelling them to produce the stuff. Okay. The second thing is, if this case is just kind of languishing, you don't have a discovery schedule that's set by the court that says, hey, this is the final date to get written discovery done, this is the final date to get depositions done, then in the case, it's going to be hard to move it. So you're going to want to maybe just make a motion to set a discovery schedule with firm dates. So then both sides' feet will be held to the fire, so to speak. And then you'll at least get somewhere, because when those dates pass, the court's not going to give you new dates, most likely. And then you're either at the situation where you're going to trial, or you're filing a motion to try to dispose of the case before trial. So it sounds like you got to do something more proactively. And I hope I'm not undermining anything your lawyer's telling me. If he does, though, if we are, he or she, then they can call us.
Yeah.
But ask for John Hansen, not Mike Leonard. This is, you know, I'm just a surrogate for John Hansen.
What percent should his lawyer send to you because of this advice? 15, 20?
Well, just don't send me a death threat.
Yeah, exactly. Ken, did that make sense? You got that down?
That makes totally sense. Yes, so I'm going to ask my attorney to do a motion for a
final discovery date and compel.
Final discovery date
and to compel.
Compel the documents. Okay.
What, Mike Leonard? What's your phone number? Get this down to Ken.
312-380-6559. But I would not get involved in that case, and I'm not seeking to get involved
Sorry.
Or to give you any advice. So no, don't call me on that. But you have counsel.
Well, maybe Ken one day will need you as a federal defense attorney.
Ken, if you get charged with a crime or want to blow the whistle on some wrongdoing, give me a call.
Yeah, okay? There you go. But don't call about this.
I want to break that.
Otherwise, call John Hansen.
Call the WGN switchboard, and I'll be sure to help you on out. Okay. Great question, Ken. Got a lot of good questions here today. We'll take a break. We'll do some more here on Let's Get Legal on WGN. Mike, I do want to talk a little bit about the case in New York involving former President Trump, who has been appearing in his own defense and took the stand, in fact, in a civil case that I think some people know a little bit about. Basically, the case is brought on by the New York Attorney General.
Correct.
Who essentially is saying that the Trump Organization inflated values of his property, his apartment specifically, his condo, other places, in order to get more lucrative deals in terms of financing from banks or institutions. Am I understanding that correctly?
Correct. Yeah, that's the gist of it. It's a civil fraud trial brought by the Attorney General's office. So
if someone says that, oh, that doesn't seem very serious, that can be very serious, though.
Well, it's very serious on a couple levels. One, it could mean that he's disqualified from owning or doing business in New York City, which would be huge, or the state of New York. It would be enormous. But also, the monetary penalties are monumental.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're talking, you know, $250 million or something like that, which, of course, hits Trump hard. So, yeah, I mean, it's big from both perspectives, not being able to do business and, more importantly, having to pay out money to the state of New York.
All right. So to set this up, what happened before the trial started, just hours or days before the trial started, the attorney general essentially asked the judge to make a ruling about whether the documents were fraudulent. What is happening there? How is that just done before the trial even starts?
Yeah, so what a lot of people don't appreciate in civil cases, you know, everyone thinks, okay, if I file a civil case, I will get to go to trial someday.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. Okay, so there's this thing called motion for summary judgment, right? And something you always tell your clients about in a civil case. So you file your lawsuit, you know, you take all the depositions, you do all the discovery work, and then before there's a trial, one side or both sides might move for summary judgment, saying, hey, look, judge, here's the evidence as it turned out. Here's the deposition testimony. We actually win as a matter of law. There's no material fact to decide at trial. We win on this issue or we win on the whole case. So this happens a lot in civil cases, especially, for instance, in civil employment cases and some other kind of cases. It could even happen in a personal injury case. You know, you file a lawsuit. It's a piece of paper. You got to prove the allegations. And if you said in the piece of paper, the light was green and I was walking across the intersection as I had a right to do, but the deposition testimony turned out to be the opposite, well, there's a safeguard. There's
no need
motion
to go through this whole trial.
Yeah, there's a motion for summary judgment where you can knock out the case. Say, hey, look, judge, they've admitted this during their deposition. They don't have a claim. Grant a summary judgment.
So the standard is very high, though, to issue a summary judgment.
Yeah, and to get not too legalistic, but there's no... The theory is there's no genuine issues of material fact to decide, right?
Right.
So the judge or the finder of fact who's considering that motion, they can't make credibility findings. They can't say, oh, I believe this side or I believe that side. They just have to look at the evidence that's undisputed, meaning that there's no disagreement about, and does that legally mean they're not entitled to recover? So in the New York case, just like in a lot of civil cases, the attorney general moved for summary judgment. And the court granted it on the law. They said, hey, look, you have made a sufficient showing that there was fraud. There's no genuine issues remaining to be decided on whether there was fraudulent conduct. So really the case at trial is only about the amount of damages resulting from that fraud.
And
right?
Who might be liable for those damages.
Correct. So, you know, in the case then, you had Trump testify, which in a civil case, he could have theoretically, if he thought he was legally exposed to criminal charges arising out of his testimony, he could have pled the Fifth Amendment. He wouldn't want to do that because if he took the Fifth Amendment in that civil case, then the court would draw an inference against him as if what the other side says is true.
I want to unpack this a little bit. First of all, if he testifies here and something is revealed that is criminally wrong, he could then end up being charged criminally for something.
Correct.
And pleading the Fifth in a criminal case... Normally, the jury is instructed, you cannot make any inferences from that. That is not the case in a civil.
Well, yeah, remember, in a criminal case, you wouldn't be taken, you'd be using your rights not to testify, but you wouldn't be saying, I'm taking the Fifth. You'd just be not testifying, right? And then jury can't consider that against you. In a civil case, you know, so Trump, if he was worried about, hey, if I testify at the civil trial, what I say could lead to criminal charges, he could have decided tactically, okay, well, I'm not going to testify because I'm more worried about a criminal action arising out of my testimony, right? The reason he didn't want to do that, number one, I don't think he had those concerns. But number two, if he had taken the Fifth and refused to testify in a civil case, there would be an adverse inference against him, right? Meaning that what the other side says essentially is true on very material points.
That the judge could assume, well, it's because he may have done something wrong.
Correct.
And it looks like he did.
Yeah, and in a civil case, you can do that. So what happened, how it really played out is, okay, he decided to testify, and he testified, you know, reportedly for, you know, 4 hours, but everyone's view was it's rambling, he's all over the board, he's not answering the questions, he's sometimes saying things that helps his case, but in the next paragraph, because he's not being disciplined, he's saying stuff that undermines his defense, you know. And so people are wondering, well, why would the judge sort of allow him to kind of go off the rails and say what he wants? Why wouldn't he rein him in?
Say, like, you can only answer the question being asked of you.
So
what we see in dramatic courtroom scenes.
Yeah, well, you see that in everyday life.
Okay.
But keep in mind a couple things. It's a bench trial, so there's no worry that when he goes off on a tangent, that the jury will hear what he says and be prejudiced, because there is no jury. It's a bench trial. Number two, I think the judge is being very strategic and tactical. He's letting him ramble and say all the stuff that he wanted to. instead of reining him in and insisting that he stick to the question. He tried to do that a few times, but it's a good move because it's a bench trial. He can ignore all the extraneous stuff.
Yeah, he doesn't have to give instructions to a jury.
Yeah,
he
he's the finder of fact. So he can just ignore what's not credible. He's not going to be prejudiced by things he shouldn't hear. He doesn't care. And by not, you know, taking action against Trump for finding him in contempt or sanctioning him, it doesn't give Trump any avenue on appeal to appeal that issue.
So, what you're saying.
So I think he handled it very wisely.
Just let him talk. I'm going to be able to weed out what I'm allowed to weed out and what I should not pay attention to because I know how this works. I'm the judge. I'm the decider. And I won't listen to this part because it doesn't have anything to do with it. There's no jury instructions like, hey, don't pay attention to that thing.
Yeah.
And then by just letting him go, it's not like he said, nope, don't do that. Do this. You got to answer this question. Nope, don't say that. If former President Trump didn't like the ultimate ruling, he could appeal on those grounds. Instead, now he said what he said.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have appeal on that specific thing.
He got a full, thorough, and opportunity to say whatever he wanted. The thing he's missing is that the judge is the finder of credibility.
Yeah.
Since you don't have a jury determine a credibility, this guy who's sitting next to you, who you're saying negative things about and not listening to, he's going to decide credibility. And the problem with that is when it goes up on appeal, when you're making a ruling as a judge and you make credibility findings, it's very unlikely to get disturbed by the appellate court. They're saying, hey, we weren't there. We didn't have the chance to assess the witness's demeanor and credibility. We're not going to overturn a case that's in large part based upon the trial judge's finding on credibility.
His kids have taken the stand, too. They might again. So might President Trump. This could go on for a little bit from what I understand. And we might have a ruling on this in December, which then leads us into 2024, which will be a wild ride. And we won't get into the criminal cases today. We're out of time, Mike Leonard. And maybe it's a nice, sunny Saturday.
Yeah, John, you gave me a heart stop at 1:55. You said you're out of the studio, Mike. I'm going to kick you out. I got armed guards.
Where can people reach you? What's the number?
312-380-6559.
LeonardTrialLawyers.com. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks,
we appreciate
John.
It. Yep, we'll take a break. We'll wrap things up.